This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Hey, y'all, it's Chip Patterson from the Cover 3 Podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. College football is about to enter its first ever 12-team playoff era, so join me, along with Tom Fornelli, Danny Cannell, and Bud Elliott, as we drop new episodes five times a week to close out the year. We've got reactions, bracket breakdowns, and best bets for these matchups with championship stakes. Follow and listen to the Cover 3 Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH. This is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester.
All right, welcome back, everybody, to another edition of Sports Daily. It is Jacob Albrecht and Paul Savage with you on this Hawaiian shirt Wednesday. Glad to be here with you. Glad to be getting ready for a midweek edition here. We got all kinds of good stuff on tap for you today. We've got all kinds of giveaways for you today. We are going to be giving away some HTO. We are going to be giving away some tickets to the PBR event here coming. And we're going to be giving away some Illuminations at Botanica vouchers as well. So all kinds of good stuff there. Coming up on the program today, we'll have our KU insider Shreya Slada in. It has been wild and crazy for KU football, as they don't have a bowl. All the movement, a lot of player movement, a lot of player decisions, a lot of coaching changes. So we'll get all caught up on that. And at the same time, we've got KU basketball coming off of its worst week of the season, dropping nine spots down from number one to number 10. So all kinds of stuff to get to with Shreya Slada at 9:30. And then at 10:30, Wichita State head men's basketball coach Paul Mills will join the show to get us caught up on the Shockers as they get a little break here. Finals week, a little time off from the schedule. So a lot of good stuff. The IHOP hotline will be open otherwise for you. It's brought to you by IHOP, the official breakfast partner of Xbox. Come in, try the decadent, fully loaded French toast only at IHOP. That number is 869-1240. You can, of course, always leave us your video comments. Thanks for watching us on 12 News Connected, on Facebook, on YouTube, on X. And thanks for listening to us on the Odyssey app. If you're away from the phone, if you're listening to us that way, if you're listening to us down the road and want to leave us a message on what you've heard, you can click the little microphone there in the Odyssey app and do that as well. Paul, happy Hawaiian Shirt Wednesday.
How well, the you? Same to you, my friend. I got a little vest on. I guess this still counts, but it's always a little chilly in the studio. They keep all this equipment cool, as you know. So, you know, I've just got a little vest on, but it doesn't downgrade my enthusiasm and my love for Hawaiian Shirt Wednesday.
It's a great day. It's cold. We're gonna just beat the winter up in psychological warfare, and here we go. Paul, the Heisman is out. That's something we want to talk about today for sure. I know you've got thoughts on it. Dylan Gabriel, Travis Hunter, Ashton Jainty, and Cam Ward named as the finalists. It's of course in reality down to two players, Jainty and Hunter. I think the class is fine. You almost have to put Dylan Gabriel in there just because of what Oregon's done. His numbers certainly support a tip of the cap in that way. One of the higher completion percentages in college football, eighth in the country in yards. He's got a good touchdown to interception ratio. His rating's right up there with any quarterback in his team's number one and has been. So I've got no issue there. Hunter, obviously, no issue. He's the heavy favorite. Jainty, obviously, should be in there. It's unfortunate. Either one of these guys, I think, in any of recent years would win the Heisman. And then you've got Cam Ward in there. But your contention is what, Paul, with that list? Because I'm fine with that list.
Yeah, I guess I'm fine with the list, but it sure shows no respect for Sakir Sanders. I mean,
Sanders.
Yeah, I think that this is a young man that could end up being a top five pick in the NFL draft. He certainly makes this team work. He's as talented as anyone in the country. I think that probably he should be.
So who should he replace?
You know, I'm always in favor of the little guy. You know that. I mean, I'm an underdog lover. However, when it comes to the Heisman, that's something really special. Competition has a lot to do with your stats, who you play, dictates what you have to offer a Heisman committee. I think Boise State and their young man, what's his name?
You'd keep Jainty out?
I almost hate to say this, but yeah, I think I do.
I think that's a little crazy. So in his game against Oregon, Paul, the top team in the country on the road, okay, you know what he did in that game?
Refresh my memory.
192 yards and 3 touchdowns, okay? In a game, 2 games against UNLV, in his first game against UNLV, who ended up ranked playing in a conference championship game, 128 yards and a touchdown in the first one, 209 yards and a touchdown in the second one. He's got a chance to break the all-time rushing records this year. He's been incredible, no matter who he's playing.
All right. Well, then if you don't like that pick, all right, I'm going to give it to you. Let's keep him. Then let's get rid of Cam Ward, because Cam Ward, at least to my observation, now he's got great numbers. I get that. He's something special. But you know something? He has a problem winning that big game, that one particular game. He lost games that he shouldn't have lost, or I should say Miami. So, okay then. I think, because I hated to say that. You know, I hated, rooting for somebody who's an underdog. And so I'm going to give you that. And you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to say Cam Ward. What do you think of that?
Well, I think that Shedeur Sanders is a better pro prospect than Cam Ward.
Okay.
But I would counter you with,
all right,
if Cam Ward couldn't win the big game, what big game did Shedeur Sanders win?
Well, that is a very, very good question.
Here are the wins for Colorado this year. Okay, because I loved Colorado. I wish they could have got in, but they have wins. Here's their wins. Okay, ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
North Dakota State,
okay.
Colorado State, Baylor at home in overtime,
yep.
UCF, mm-hmm. Arizona, Cincinnati, Texas Tech, Utah, and Oklahoma State. They have losses at Nebraska, at home against K-State, and at Kansas. Now, you tell me why that's any better. Miami finished ahead of Colorado, and they should have, in the CFP. Cam Ward threw for more yards than Shedeur Sanders. He threw for more touchdowns than Shedeur Sanders, threw fewer interceptions than Shedeur Sanders, had a higher quarterback rating than Shedeur Sanders. The only area he was not better, in which Shedeur Sanders, this is why I think he's such a good pro prospect, is completion percentage. But Cam Ward was still right at the top of college football, right near the top, 15th in the country in completion.
Man, you really know how to make a case, don't you? You sure you shouldn't have been a lawyer when you grew up?
I should have been a lawyer. There's no doubt about it.
You should have been. How does all this stuff work when you have these arguments with your wife? How's this work for you then, big boy?
Exactly how you think it would.
That's right. Okay.
It works much better professionally than it does, but my point is, and look, I get it.
Yeah,
do
I know.
I think Shedeur Sanders is one of the four best college football players? I do. I think there are a couple of things there, though. They didn't finish with a good enough record to catapult him in. And if his teammate Travis Hunter wasn't there, he'd probably be there. That's the issue that he faces right now. Like, it's hard to take two Heisman candidates from a 3-loss team. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty tough sell. And it's especially tough when you can statistically say Cam Ward had a better season, because he did. And when you can say Dylan Gabriel had a fantastic season and is playing for the top team and they're unbeaten, which they are. And then you have Jainty, who may be pushing for and is pushing for and could finish the best season a running back has ever had in college football. And so all of those things are working against Shedeur Sanders, this is the correct list. Again, Shedeur Sanders, I think, might be the best player in college football. I think he's a great pro prospect. I think he's very good. I think that, you know, if you plugged him into Oregon, let's say, I mean, it'd be lights out. He'll get great weapons at, you know, at Colorado. But that's the thing, though. He just, his teammate's a better candidate. And there are three others with better on-paper cases. There just are.
And I think probably it's kind of useless us arguing this, whether he should be on that list, although it is prestigious to be a finalist. But let's face it, this Heisman is already decided. You and I both know who the Heisman winner is going to be this year. I don't think there's any question whatsoever about that.
Yeah.
It's going to be Hunter. Hunter is amazing defensively. Offensively, look at the stats. What is he? First team defense, first team offense in the Big 12, whatever. I can't remember what the combination is, but he is amazing. And we have not really seen anybody quite like him. Well, in the days of, since the days of Iron Man football, and you know what that is, as players going both ways. When was the last both way player you even remember? I'm struggling to think of somebody.
Not to that level.
Not
I mean,
to this level.
You
got to
go
right.
Way back. So here's what's interesting. Right now, Jainty is at just 3 yards shy of 2,500 yards. There have only been three players ever to reach that number: Kevin Smith, Melvin Gordon, Barry Sanders. Barry Sanders, of course, with the record. Paul Jainty could get that in only one playoff game. Now, the issue is, I think it had this vote not already been taken, and most people apparently sent their ballots in right before conference championship weekend. But the reality is, if they waited, and they should, and it's ridiculous and absolutely stupid that they don't take the vote after the season's finished, in my opinion, then Jainty might have a chance at this, because the numbers, Paul, if just in one game, he's going to have a chance to be college football's all-time leading rusher.
If he wins the Heisman, I'm going to come on the radio and claim something's rigged, something's wrong. There's a jealousy.
Well, he won't, because the votes have already been tallied before that. And Travis Hunter, and look, I voted in the Big 12 AP. I had Travis Hunter as first teamer on both sides of the ball.
That's right.
Right now, that's also pretty hard. It's like the Shohei Ohtani debate, right?
That's
like,
a
how
good,
do you
good
beat Shohei Ohtani when he does everything?
That's
so
a good point, yeah.
It's a real. It's like Aaron Judge.
Right.
If you put his home run record up against Shohei Ohtani and what he does on both sides, like, what do you pick there? It's hard. It's right. Very difficult. And I'll tell you, as somebody who had Travis Hunter Heisman future bet last year and Jainty's Heisman future bet this year, it's a tough pill to swallow. But yeah, Hunter's going to win the award. I wish they would wait so we can continue the debate into college football's all-time leading rusher, which could happen. It's too bad that we don't get to do that. All right, we'll take a quick break here. Coming up a little later in this hour, Sharia Slaughter, KU Insider, joins us. Paul and I have got a lot to get off our chest today. We're going to talk about this Juan Soto contract.
Oh, my.
I'm telling you, Paul, you put that up against Bobby Witt Jr.'s contract, and the Royals got steel.
You are right there. I hadn't thought of it that way, but you're correct.
Baseball's winter meetings have happened. There's been a lot of players signing and moving. What does it mean for the Royals? We can get into that a little bit later as well. We're going to take a quick break. On the way out, let's get you to our first giveaway of the day. We'll start with HTO today. If you want a free iced tea, if you want a free hot or iced coffee, you can get one of each on us here at Sports Daily. All you have to do to get those drinks from either Wichita location or in Derby is text the keyword TEA to the short code 20357. Good luck, everybody. You can enter once per day. Message and data rates apply. We'll be right back. More Sports Daily right after this. Welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily here on KFH. Jake Ballbrock, Paul Savage with you. Glad to be here with you. Thanks to Prairie Fire Coffee for keeping us fueled up each and every morning here on KFH and all over our Odyssey family of studios. Paul, real quick here, before we get to Shreya Slaughter.
All righty.
And we will get to some of our baseball talk in between Trias and Paul Mills in the second hour.
All right.
But I want to ask you about the transfer portal, which is one of your favorite topics, has been record setting for its start to this. We brought this up yesterday, and there are some big names in there, a lot of quarterbacks to be expected, a lot of wide receivers in there right now, some notable names that, you know, teams we follow have been reported to be in on, as in Kevin Concepcion of NC State and K-State have been in, you know, rumored by the people that follow that stuff for a long time. But it's record setting. It crashed the actual portal, whatever it is that is. But when we look at this, does that surprise you at all now that we are setting records in the portal? Because it doesn't really surprise me at all. I think we're still in the chaotic times of all of this. And until they find some resolutions to some of these cases and organize out like the way this will go, this is what we're going to have. With compensation comes some regulation here in this, I think. But until they get that all sorted out, they just aren't able. They can't hold these kids the way they used to because the courts are telling them they can't.
Well, hold on there, big boy. You have been shouting from the rooftops, free enterprise, United States Constitution. You can't, you can't regulate this kind of stuff. So, I mean, because after all, you can't indenture somebody into a particular business enterprise, whatever it is, without their free will, right? So that's, and you've been, and by the way, I've agreed with you too. I mean, you've been shouting it louder than me, I think you're very correct. But with that being said, we hadn't seen anything yet. I mean, we haven't scratched the surface on this stuff.
But the money is so big.
Go ahead.
The problem is, Paul, and you're correct, I have been, and I do agree with all those things, up until the point that you've signed a contract and you've got a work agreement in place that doesn't allow you to leave.
Yeah, but wait a second. That's 1 year, though. Most of this stuff, football
doesn't have to be.
Scholarships are year to year. Scholarships are year to year.
You can, if players are being compensated, not just through NIL, right? Not just through image and likeness and all that stuff.
That's right.
If it's revenue sharing, if it's whatever that is where the university is directly giving money to a player based on that player being at the university, right? That like a specific work agreement, that's where the regulation can come, because now it's compensation, right? In order to receive revenue sharing, you must commit to 2 years at this university. And at the end of 2 years, you will receive the full value, or however it's worked out. People sign those kinds of agreements all the time, Paul. Like, I have one at work. I've got a contract I always have at a TV station. I can't just up and leave anytime I want. There are penalties involved in that. I might have to pay them back. I might have to pay them to hire my replacement. I certainly can't go across town and work for another. Like, there are all kinds of things within a contract that would prevent me from entering the professional transfer portal. Now, I could pay those penalties, and that's probably going to be a part of this. But the solution at the end of the day, and I've always said this chaos will be here. It's sort of necessary while they get the details sorted out. Once they do, then it's much easier, right? You just say, okay, here's what we're going to do. Here's your portion of compensation. Mm-hmm. Here's your portion of the NIL collective.
Right.
All of this money's on the table.
Right.
You got to complete 2 years.
Got it.
And that's what they're going to, and then a player's going to have to make a decision whether or not they agree to that contract. Mm-hmm. And what you'll see is sort of like free agency, unless it gets regulated down by the conferences to be universal, which if the players agree to that, okay. But you may see a situation like free agency. Maybe the hottest ticket's like, nah, I don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. I'll go somewhere else where I do have the freedom to leave after 1 year.
Right.
That particular situation.
Two things. One, you have an ending date on your contract. At some point, the contract you have with KWCH, it has a date that says this contract runs until this date, right? You have an end. And some of these times, and these all kids all have the same thing. 1 year contracts. You talk about honoring a contract. They honor it for 1 year because that's what's their contract. Football scholarships, basketball scholarships are all renewed on a year-to-year basis. So it's a one-year contract. So with that being said, that's why everybody can come, I guess, can come and go. So,
right now.
Now, the other thing is that the way you're putting it, I think the genie's out of the bag. I mean, right now, you came up with NIL to break into this territory. You're not taking NIL out of the genie's bottle anytime in the future because it has generated so much money. And I believe what will happen is that the NIL generates so much more money than what universities are going to say, well, we're going to kick in off the ticket sales and this and that, that it would dwarf what the university would be able to pay for players. And I think that's the difference in this situation. Because once you pay Arch Manning $8 million, and that was the last number I heard. It might even be higher. When he was being recruited, what, a year and a half ago?
Who knows? Doesn't matter.
$8 million. That
worth
genie,
what somebody will pay.
That genie is out of that bottle, and it's not going back in.
Yeah, look, you're worth what somebody will pay you. Rick just says, because the rumor for BYU's basketball player was $7 million. Rick says $7 million for an incoming freshman that has done nothing and could easily flame out. That's right, Rick. And maybe that means the next time they don't give him $7 million.
Happens all the time with the first-round draft pick in the NFL draft, doesn't it?
Right, exactly. And so maybe the next time they don't pay. But right now, you're worth, Paul, we're all worth what somebody's willing to pay us. Right? Don't let anybody tell you you're not worth what somebody's willing to pay you.
Well,
think about that logically for just a second.
Well, you
Paul.
Just deflated my ego. I can tell you that. I am deflated.
I'm a prospective employer for you, and I say, Paul, I think you're worth $100,000 a year. And somebody somewhere else says, oh, God, Savage? He's not worth, you can't give him $100,000 a year. He's worth 50. What is that? What the hell?
Yeah.
Like, you're going to take the 100. And
Jad,
you have every right to do it.
Jad, what are you and I worth? Come on. What are you and I worth, quick?
Apparently not much.
Well, apparently so.
According to some people. That's what I mean. But we don't put this stuff into the context of real life. Like, yeah, you know what? A freshman is worth $7 million because somebody was willing to pay him
$7
million.
They were willing to pay him. And by all accounts, he's a stud. And of course,
could they be wrong? Of course they could.
Yeah,
and maybe that'll, you know, help their decision-making process the next time. But right now, they say that's what he's worth. If that's what they say, then good for him.
You got it.
You know who's not worth their contract? Deshaun Watson. Don't know why I needed to throw that straight.
Well, come on. That's about the most obvious statement you've ever made in the history of this show.
But somebody paid it, so that's what he's worth, I suppose.
You and I both knew he wasn't when he signed it. We both knew that.
Sure we did, but somebody still paid it.
That's right.
We'll come back, and we will have Shreya Slada in. It has been a wild time for the last week at KU up in Lawrence for the football program. It's been a rough week for the basketball program. We'll get to the bottom of all of it. Shreya Slada joins us next on Sports Daily.
.975 and 1240 KFH.
All right, welcome back in. Still waiting on Shreya Slada. We'll send him a message and get him in here just as quick as we can. Paul, what do you make of all this change for KU football? They've changed coaches. They've changed off. They've added now co-offensive coordinators. They're changing defensive coordinators. Jalen Daniels is back. It's been a lot of movement, a lot of changes for a team that's going to have a ton of change on the roster as well. But, you know, why wait, right? Like, they got to get aggressive right out of the gates. I think that, you know, for the most part, and we'll see, you know, without knowing whether these coaches will work out or, you know, the resumes of these coaches, we've probably not really heard much about until they were hired. Making the changes, I think we can all agree, are necessary and good that they've done them.
Well, that is an excellent question, and there's a lot of little different things that go into an answer. One has to do with coaches. One has to do with players. One has to do with perception of where this program can be. And I didn't say where it is. I said where it can be. And there's going to take some belief based upon Coach Leipold to get this team to believe. It's been a tough year. It's been an up-and-down year. It's been a crazy year. And there's a lot of things going on with them. And the only thing that I can say is that a conversation was probably had between Coach Leopold and the quarterback. They both sat
Jalen
down. Jalen Daniels both sat down and probably had a conversation. Here's what we need to do. Here's what who's going to do it. Because I don't think Jalen Daniels would say, I'm coming back until I know who's calling plays. Who's going to be in control of what we do? What will our offensive philosophy be? How will we handle this? How will we handle that? This situation, that situation. How will we do it? Who? I don't know that we're so worried about who's coming back and who's going to come back into the portal, because they're going to come and go. That's just the nature of the game anymore. And you have to assume that you're the University of Kansas in the Big 12. You're going to get some good players. And you have to assume that KU's going to have some NIL and that they can do some things with regards to getting players in. So with all that being said, most of this stuff had to have been cleared with Jalen Daniels. That's my take. But rightfully so, because if you want him back, and let's face it, you think you can get a better quarterback than him out of the portal? When he's playing well,
no.
When he's playing healthy, he can be as good a quarterback as there is in the Big 12, in my opinion. Now, that's saying a lot because there's some really good quarterbacks. There's some really good quarterbacks in the Big 12. But you know what I mean? He's an excellent player. He would be enough to get you into a title game. Wouldn't you agree? And so if
next year, no, I wouldn't agree. Let's bring in Tre Islada because they have too much other roster turnover. But what do you make of that, Tre? Because what Paul was just talking about, I think, is sort of the conversation. How much of some of these changes now with co-offensive coordinators, two new faces taking over, how much do you think Jalen Daniels had to do with these guys specifically, because he's coming back? So you'd have to think quite a bit, right? Like there has to be some synergy in the decision for Daniels to come back and these particular guys being brought in, which maybe was not the case last year when Grimes was brought in and we had some chemistry. So what is the inside on all of that?
I think you look at it, and in the position Jalen is in, he needs continuity, right? You want somebody that's been there with you since day one. Jim Zabrowski has been there with him since day one. It's a relationship that he's built. And it's something I was thinking about, and I didn't really quite understand it. And, you know, just talking to friends about it, is why didn't Kansas do this a year ago? Why did they bring in Jeff Grimes? Why was that done? And essentially the season was lost was between trying to implement Grimes' system and Jalen getting back to normal. You know, you lost 5 or 6 games there, I think, at the beginning of the year that you might not have been able to do before. And I think the big thing is, I presume he came back for a couple of reasons. I've heard continuity, familiarity, but I also think he has a level of influence at Kansas he was not going to get anywhere else. He can help with the recruiting. He can make sure he gets the right guys. And he can make sure Kansas, you know, picks up the right coaching staff that can kind of grow with him. I presume next year is going to be rebuilding year. Who knows? Maybe they pick up a bunch of great guys in the portal. But I think it's going to be a rough year for Kansas in the record column. But I think there's a way that Jalen Daniels comes out of next year feeling, like he had a good year. And that starts with them getting the right guys in the transfer portal and him having the continuity that Jim Zabrowski brings.
I think you're right. And so then begs the question, I think it's pretty clear that he is familiar with and likes the two guys that are coming in to run the offense. Okay, that's half the equation. I can't imagine that Jalen Daniels has a whole lot of interest in coming in and being in a not talented offense. So the other part of that conversation must be, logically, right, if we can draw a line from point A to point B, that KU has every intention of going and spending some money in the portal to get some of these players to come in here. So where do they stand with this now, a record-setting portal year?
Yeah, you know, I think they have to, right? Like, at the end of the day, you have to replace 3 wide receivers. You've got to replace some offensive linemen. You've got to replace your star running back, which I think they might have done with the Iowa pickup. I don't know if he's Devin Neal good, but he can move a little bit. He's a little slow, but he kind of runs through the tackles, and just looking at his highlights. But, whatever they were saying in the negotiations with Jalen Daniels, I bet you they were saying this. hey, we're going to pay you XYZ and you can come back for next year, but we're going to go in the portal and pick up this guy and that guy and this guy, and you can be the head of recruiting and help us pick up that guy and this guy. Because I really think Jalen Daniels would not have come back if not for two things: familiarity with the Kansas system and Jim Zabrowski, and them giving him some level of influence to go out there and get an offense, put him in a position to be an NFL quarterback by this time next year. Okay, right now, if Jalen Daniels had declared for the draft, I'm not sure he would have been drafted. Maybe we had the second half of the season that he had the entire year, I think we might be having a different conversation. I don't know if he'd be sticking around if he had the year, you know, those last six or seven games that he had the entire year, you know? And I think it absolutely, for him, you know, I thought personally it doesn't make a ton of sense to come, you know, out there and come back to Kansas, because if your goal was to be an NFL quarterback, you need the continuity and talent, right? You need the talent most of all. And Kansas doesn't have that, but they have a continuity. So I think he's betting on the fact that Kansas is going to pick up XYZ from the transfer portal. We have no idea, right? Like, we see them picking up things, where they picked up a guy, you know, picked up Gage Keys last night or yesterday. He was in Auburn, former Kansas Jayhawk. He decided to come back because he wasn't playing at Auburn. And he obviously, you know, felt like this was the right fit for him again. So there are guys who want to play for Kansas, and there are guys who's going to want to play for Jalen Daniels. And I think Kansas is betting on that to rebuild on the fly, because this year is going to be a really testing year, I think, for everybody involved with the Kansas football program, because the expectations shouldn't be more than 5 wins, if that, right? Because we have no idea how they're going to refill those gaps that, you know, they've left behind. Kobe, Mello, Devin Neal, the wide receivers, the tight ends, like all that stuff has to be refilled. Linebacker room as well. I just don't know if you can turn around a program and expect them to be better than 5 wins this quickly in this day and age. Maybe you can. I just don't. I mean, I don't know. Like, this is a lot of talent you have to fill in.
I got a question for you, Sharius. Yeah. And I don't remember anybody telling me or, you know, sharing this with me. How competitive is the University of Kansas with NIL money compared to the rest of the Big 12? I mean, I know they would probably be way behind if they were in the SEC or maybe even the Big Ten, but how competitive is KU throwing around money like, say, Colorado or Arizona or Utah or name your Big 12 team? How competitive are they?
They're relatively competitive. It's not basketball, though. They're clearly the most competitive in basketball in the entire conference. I think it's them and BYU and K-State really at the top there. It is, you know, you have to be relatively competitive right now because there's so many gaps to fill in. There are obvious.
I think we just lost there. The connection with Shreyas for just a second. So we'll try to get that connection back. It's fascinating, Paul. I mean, the decision is fascinating. I think Shreyas is on to that for sure. Jalen Daniels comes back, but what's he coming back to? I think, you know, that's the question you have to ask. And the fact that he's coming back, it just tells me that they're going to be aggressive here. Like you can't. Like, why would you do one thing without the other? You know.
Well, and I understand that, but let's not get all crazy about this. He's coming back because market conditions have probably forced that. When I say market conditions, I'm talking about the overall ability of the package that's being rented out here by other teams or the University of Kansas, potentially other teams or the University of Kansas. And Jalen Daniels has not exactly had what we call a Heisman career, is he? I mean, he's been up and down. He's been hurt. He's played well at times. He's played not so well at times. He's been injured some. So, I mean, you know, we've faced that almost on a yearly basis. Injury-wise, there's been something. I'm wondering if his value isn't as large as it can be at the University of Kansas versus, say, someone else. Because if somebody else were to say, let's go ahead and pull Jalen Daniels out of the portal and we'll get him into our program, the question would be, and I think rightfully so, it would be asked, well, how long does he last? Can he make it through a season? We don't know that he can make it through a season because I'm trying to rack my brain. I don't think he's made it through any of his seasons at the University of Kansas without some sort of injury or missed time or whatever the case might be. So, you know, it makes total sense to me, and I was not surprised in the least when it was announced Jalen Daniels would be coming back, because I don't know that there were tons and tons of teams.
Oh, I think he'd have had suitors at the big contenders next year.
Do you think so? Do you think so?
While he may not have played his way into the NFL draft, and this is no offense to Will Howard, if Will Howard lands at Ohio State, Jalen Daniels could land somewhere. You know, that's with a little more certainty. And so that to me, like, look, as it currently stands, based on what we know KU is losing on the roster, okay, like as it currently stands, without knowing what they're going to do in the portal, but just what we know is graduating, KU will not have been the most talented team at the moment that Daniels would have been able to play for. Let's put it that way.
Right.
Now, could they be through work in the portal? Sure they could. And I think the reason this is all so interesting to me, and we're getting reconnected with Shreyas. Jad's going to get him just on the IHOP hotline here. But that's what makes this so interesting to me, is because it screams to me that if he's coming back there, they have big designs on trying to get a ton of guys in through the portal. I think that's what we need to be watching here.
That's the value of Jalen Daniels.
No matter what you think of his, and we have Shreyas back, right, Shreyas, and then we can, you know, and then we can move on to basketball here. But as we look at Jalen Daniels and Kansas, without knowing what Kansas is going to do in the portal, Jalen Daniels would have had more talented teams knocking on his door than what Kansas currently looks like. I think the thing that should make Kansas fans encouraged by the return is that, and that would tell you that they have every intention of being hyper aggressive in the portal to bring talent back in.
No, absolutely. I heard there were some Big Ten schools looking at him, and there's genuine interest there. But this is what I'm saying. Familiarity and comfort that Kansas provides is something that I think no one else can provide. And on top of that, obviously, they have a competitive NIL offer for Jalen and other players, because they're going to have to, I think, to replace the talent that has been lost over the last year. I mean, you have so many guys who have left. I mean, there's nothing to do right now but just look in the portal and pick up that guy and that guy and that guy. So only so much internal camp talent exists. And there are going to be some guys that internally get moved up to positions, of course, right? They get promoted almost in a sense. And that's going to happen. But right now, for Kansas and their ambitions of having a competitive season next year, the bulk of the talent, I presume, will come from the transfer portal.
All right, Shreyas, let's talk KU hoops for a second then. Football, lots of changes. We'll watch them. Basketball, we've got this roster now. They have a really bad week. They go on the road and lose in two really brutal places to play true road games. They drop from number one to number 10. Here are the two things that concern me. That Hunter Dickinson looks like he's got a problem with his physical athleticism, and they're really going to need Flory Badunga to elevate quickly so they can get Hunter Dickinson more time off the court, defensively especially. And the other thing, and I wouldn't call this a concern, but I know this is a concern among fans, that we're getting flashbacks to last year, that when Dickinson isn't out there on offense, this team can't score. Those would be the two things I think we look at here with last week's stretch that I think that are looming over the program at the moment. What do you think of either of those things?
Yeah, I think those are all very real and valid concerns. I think this team is, you know, on paper, supposed to be a lot better than last year. And we've seen it in flashes, right? The win against Duke, the win against North Carolina, the win against Michigan State. But the last week was just kind of an abject disaster. Let's call it what it is, okay? There was no reason for this Kansas team to lose to Creighton and then your biggest rival, Missouri. To go out and get embarrassed at Columbia like they did, just, to me, speaks to the magnitude of what college basketball is like. I just don't think there are enough guys that care about rivalries. I'm going to just say what it is, okay? And I showed up on the court. Bill Self should never have to say, we didn't get these guys ready to play. It's freaking Missouri. If you're not ready to play Missouri, who are you going to be ready to play? Come on. And on top of that, just the same issues are coming back from last year. Maybe it's not quite as bad, but the three-point shooting is a little better. But they're not shooting enough threes. They're not getting to the line enough. I think the 360th in free throw rate or something like that. Like the fact that they managed to have a top 25 offense and adjusted offensive efficiency, according to KenPom, is a miracle in itself. But it keeps on dropping. And to me, that is really concerning. On top of that, Bill talking about not having an identity. And I don't know if you guys watched the press conference, but Bill is pretty diplomatic when you ask him about starting and reserves and stuff like that, usually, you know. And he was asked about, you know, what, if, like, do you feel like you have a fifth starter? And he was pretty honest about it. He was like, no, I don't think so. I know I want to win the job. I know, who, you know, this thing. But this constant rotation of putting this guy in the lineup, putting that guy in the lineup, putting this guy in the lineup, it doesn't build continuity whatsoever. And it's clear the minute insertion up and down between all these different transfer guys has put them in a place where they're not playing with rhythm. Even a guy like Zeke Mayo, who was excellent coming off the bench the first couple of games, he's been pretty bad in the starting lineup. I think he's averaging like 8 points per game, like shooting less than 35% from three. And he's been their best transfer this year by far. It just feels like this balance between trying to make a team that already lacks spacing because of the core three, besides Hunter Dickinson, or the core three don't shoot threes, and then they've just added two new guys and say, oh, shoot the heck out of the ball, which they don't do, because that's not a Bill Self offense. And it just feels like modern basketball meshed in with the transfer portal issue, meshed in with trying to play the way Bill Self plays, has just led to problems.
You know, so the timing, Shreyas, and we can finish with this as we're up against the hour here. The timing is interesting because it comes right before they essentially get a week off. What do you sense, you know, inside the program there, the urgency of this week? Like, I would imagine this is going to be a very unpleasant week for the players. They might not like that they have a week off right now because practice is probably going to be brutal. Does this team respond to that sort of thing?
I think so. I mean, if they don't respond to it, then what are we doing here? It's a team filled with a bunch of veterans and experienced senior guys and all this other stuff. If they don't respond to that, they're not responding to anything. Let's call it what it is. There's two games left before conference play starts. Kansas, we still don't know who the fifth starter is. We don't know what the identity of this team is. Is the identity of this team is they're older and experienced? I don't think that's a good enough identity. We still don't know what the rotation is. Really is, because I really don't know if David Coit is going to be playing 15 plus minutes a game in conference play. I don't know if he's good enough to play that much amount of minutes. I mean, he certainly tries. He works. He does everything. We don't know if Ryland Griffin is going to give what they expected to get. We still don't know if AJ Storr is ever going to get to anywhere close to what he looked like at Wisconsin. Maybe he will, maybe he won't, but he's been pretty abject, I will say, disaster so far to start the season. He's had maybe one or two good games. The rest, I feel like he's not found any rhythm. His shooting splits are pretty horrid, and it just feels like he's out there on the court, doesn't really know what he's doing more often than not. I think to me, the most concerning part is this is a team that's older, and yes, they had transfers, but these transfers are older transfers for the most part. Why is it finding it so hard to gel between the offense and defense? The defense has looked good for the most part, but the offense is just, it is hard to watch.
It's been tough. It's been tough. They'll be back at it. And we think, look, we think they'll be turned around. I think this team is way more talented than last year. So it's a couple bad games. And you brought it up earlier. Important to remember that they also beat Duke. They also beat Michigan State. They also beat North Carolina. Bad week. True road games. Hopefully they gain from it. Shreyas, you can follow his work, the KC Star, reporting each and every day on KU football, KU basketball. You can follow him on social media. Sorry for the connection issue earlier, Shreyas. Glad you got in, though, and thanks for being here. We'll talk next week.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys, and apologies for the connection. I've been kind of dealing with that on and off this morning.
Yeah, it is what it is. We you know, Paul, when you have these awesome ways to, you know, when you have all these awesome ways for people to take in the show, sometimes you got to pivot.
Live radio, my friend, live radio.
Phone call, but we do appreciate Shreyas is one of our guests that always joins us via video. That I know that means something to the folks watching on 12 News Connected on Facebook, on YouTube and X, all the different ways to take in the show. On the way out of this first hour, Let's give another something away here, Paul. Let's go Illuminations here. So here's what we've got. A four-pack of vouchers to Illuminations at Botanica. It's courtesy of Sports Daily, KFH, and Odyssey Wichita. All you got to do to win, text the keyword SHINE right now to the short code 20357. That's SHINE to 20357. You can enter this once per day. We're going to draw these winners on Friday. It's 20357. The keyword is SHINE. Good luck, everybody. We're coming right back. Hour number two featuring Paul Mills, the bottom of the hour. We got more for you coming. It's Albrecht. It's Savage. Happy Hawaiian Shirt Wednesday, everybody. We'll be right back.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily here on a Wednesday. It's a Hawaiian Shirt Wednesday. We're glad to be with you on this Wednesday. Thanks to Shreya Salata for hopping on. If you missed anything about the wild and crazy week it's been for Kansas athletics, both football and basketball, you can go back and listen to that anytime on the Odyssey app. You can also watch it back on YouTube, on X, on Facebook, 12 News Connected, all the different ways people take in the show. Thanks to everybody for listening. To our thousands and thousands, we're told, of podcast listeners, wherever it is that you are listening, we appreciate that. Thanks for downloading and listening to the program that way as well. Paul Mills coming up this hour a little bit later. Your chance to win some PBR tickets coming up this hour a little later. Until then, the IHOP hotline's open for you at 869-1240. It's brought to you by IHOP, the official breakfast partner of Xbox. Come in, try the decadent, fully loaded French toast only at IHOP. And I want to say thanks to Crestview Country Club for being a part of the show here. They've got all kinds of events coming up. They got a big Santa brunch coming up there. They're always great to our kids when we go to those things, but Santa will be there. They got food. You can get some pictures taken. They've got Christmas events coming up, New Year's events, all kinds of things on the social side of a membership, which, to be quite honest, is more affordable. If you're not a golfer, you can use the great pool and all these other things. Give Crestview a call. Ask them about those memberships. Tommy and I are both over there. We both love it. Families both love it, but we appreciate their support of the program. Tell them we sent you. All right, Paul. Get to a couple of comments from our conversation with Shreya Salata. Rick first says, how can they care? Now, this would be in regards to all the new players when we're talking about going to Missouri and that heated rivalry. He says they're all brand new to the team. Ken counters in that conversation happening on YouTube right now, saying, I think the opposite, Rick. They come in to be saviors with big checks, a lot of pressure to produce for a coach that wants things done right all the time. So here would be my sort of take with, do players, you know, immediately care about big rivalries when they transfer in? I'd say this. If we can all remember way back, Paul, to when we were in college, did you care about rivalries when you were a freshman on campus?
Well, yeah, I think I did.
Yeah, you're fed that, you know, you're fed that history and that information the second you walk on campus.
Sure.
These guys have been a part of the roster, and the second they found out they were going to Missouri, they've had classmates, they've had teachers, they've had fans telling them, oh, you got to go to Missouri. And be, if they don't care, then they've never cared. And I don't believe that that's the case. I do think you can acclimate to rivalries right away because you're immersed in it 24/7 when you're on a college campus. We immediately step onto a college campus and we get rivalries. And, you know, look, it's different than, you know, a kid from Kansas who understands the rivalry and has been around it their whole lives. I get that. But most of these players that come in and play in these rivalries, they walk in from other states. They don't know anything about that. And so, yeah, I think they can get up for it. You know, in a big way. So I think that the motivation is fine. I think they've got to start playing better. And I think that we're going to learn a whole lot about Kansas basketball this year in what happens this week, Paul, based on what happened last week, right? They get a week of no games. Like, it's all practice time for Bill Self. They're going to learn something, whether they like it or not this week, right? Yeah. It's going to be a tough week.
Yeah, to the baseline. I think that's going to be uttered a couple of times.
I would say so.
Yeah.
I would say so. It'll be good. It'll be fine. I think they're going to be okay. All right, Paul, let's I want to talk about this baseball funny money being thrown around here a little
funny
bit.
Money.
I ran these numbers yesterday, and Juan Soto gets $750 million.
That's right. You didn't stutter, did you?
In a 15-year deal. We're going to get to a point where a player is worth $1 billion. They're going to get a $1 billion contract, right? What franchises were worth 10 years ago. I think, if that's the market, I sort of get it. It kind of is. I wouldn't do it. I don't think it's going to work out for the Mets. I think that's too aggressive. I think that's too far ahead of what one player does in baseball. You know, I think if we're trying to draw equivalencies, you can justify quarterbacks in football making that much more than their peers as a winning formula. I don't know that you can in baseball. Now, the Mets are going to follow this up and spend even more money, so we'll see. And we saw the Dodgers and the Yankees in the World Series last year. Okay, so, you know, I get it. But we know, Paul, that it is not equivalent to spending the most money wins the World Series. It just doesn't. Now, you got to spend, but you don't have to spend the most. And the question becomes, is Juan Soto $70 million a year more valuable than, you know, three $22 million a year players? That's going to be interesting to see how that market plays out. I'll be curious on this one. He's an incredible player, one of the great young players in the game, maybe the best player, at least of a generation, to ever truly hit free agency like this. So I get it, right? Shohei was last year, kind of the same thing. But when you put it up next to Bobby Witt Jr.'s contract, Paul, at 11 years and $285 million or whatever it is, And they're not directly equivalent. I get it. Soto was a true free agent, and Bobby Witt Jr. had 4 years of control when he signed his deal. But they're both going to have the opportunity to opt out at about the same time. I think Bobby Witt Jr.'s is in 2031, and Juan Soto's is in 2030, or vice versa. But when I look at those two deals side by side, the Royals, if Bobby Witt Jr. stays healthy and the trajectory stays the same, this will go down as one of the better contracts of all time, even if it only takes him to the opt-out, which it almost certainly will. Both of these players are probably going to opt out of their deals. But that means they got, I'd say, the 3 or 4 extra years of Bobby Witt Jr. added onto the control they have at that price tag for what will be about, you know, $75 to $90 million. This can be a steal, Paul. It's going to be a steal.
Well, you know, and the thing that kind of gets me to a certain extent is that, boy, I'll tell you what. Do you remember it wasn't that long ago we were shaking our head? $700 million for Otani. Now, that was deferred for what, 10 years? Does that sound right? I think that's right. A lot of that money, most of that money, in fact, I think all of the $700 million was deferred for 10 years. I think I'm correct on that, right, Jacob? I'm pretty sure. But with that being
said, he deferred a bunch to make it better for the Dodgers.
To make it better.
Soto did not do that.
He did not do that. See, that's what blows my mind is that this is money. I mean, this is all money that's going to be paid starting tomorrow. Well, starting whenever the contract's signed. And that's going to take place no matter what. And it's going to start, and it's going to start immediately. But what this is doing, and we've seen it for, I don't know, several years now, you know, average players making unbelievable amounts of money. And it makes me wonder, you look at the average NFL football player, and I wonder what he's thinking. He sees NBA and what those guys are making. Some of those guys are signing for unbelievable, you know, $200,000 to $300,000 over the course of X amount of years. And he sees all of his fellow football players. You know, you can be a pretty good lineman, offensive lineman, and you're only going to make $5-6 million a year. And I think to myself, you know, $700 million. Where does this stop? Where does this end? I mean, you're right. I hadn't really thought of it this way, but you made a comment just a while ago, and you said, "When's the first $1 billion contract coming?" Well, we would have thought to ourselves, 5 years ago, a $1 billion contract—that's laughable. You know, that's hilarious. But I'm telling you right now, I think it could be in the next couple, 2 to 3 years. You're going to
have it'll be in the next decade. I don't know how quickly it'll happen because we're talking
about. But it will, won't it?
We're talking about in Ohtani and Soto, two of the best players of the last 20 years.
Right.
Like it's not, they're not coming around every year, the players of that caliber. So here's what the Royals got. And remember what Soto is getting. Bobby Witt Jr. will almost certainly opt out of his deal in the year 2031. The way I read it, he gets player options, Paul, in 2031, 32, 33, and 34. And then the club options kick in 35, 36, 37. I would be stunned if he doesn't, if he's healthy, if he doesn't opt out after 2031. Doesn't mean the Royals can't re-sign him. It just means he's going to take that option because the market's going to be too high, right? Look at what Soto just made. He might be your billion-dollar player when that time comes. So, anywho, before that, though, the Royals have him until he's 30 years old, until he's 31 years old, truly. In that, so what they've done is they bought out his arbitration years. So the Royals would have been able to keep him, if they didn't do the deal last year, they would have been able to keep him essentially through 2027. So they'd have him for 3 more years. What they did through this contract was guarantee his services through 3 more years, okay, till he's age 30, through his age 30 season in 2030. So that's what they did with their deal. What did that cost them? Well, in those 3 years, essentially what they've done is give him a 3-year, $100 million deal. Now, in the current economics of baseball, for Bobby Witt Jr., who would have absolutely been an MVP, if not for an historic season by Aaron Judge last year, had a higher WAR, had a better season than Juan Soto just had, what do you think it would have cost them for a 3-year deal on the open market for Bobby Witt Jr.? 210, probably $250 million starts the bidding for a 3-year deal for him.
I was going to say they're going to get him. I was going to say 350.
I mean, it could be at that point by the time that time comes. I don't think it'll be, you know, I don't think it's quite that high, but they're getting him for 3 years and $100 million. That's at least half of the open market value for him. At least half, probably even less. And so I look at that deal and I just like it takes cojones to do that kind of a deal. Don't get me wrong. Like you're taking a lot of risk to do one of those kinds of deals before you have to and before a player hits free agency. So many things can change and happen. But if all the things work out and he continues on this pace, I mean, my goodness, it is going to be an incredible steal for the Royals to be able to do that. And when you look at the overall franchise and the reality of their financial situation, it was a brilliant move. And I think a brilliant risk to take for the Royals when they took it. I applaud them for it, and it will allow them to be successful. Now, it emphasizes the urgency on these next 6 or 7 years for sure. And this isn't the first time they've done it. They did this with Salvador Perez a long, long time ago. It's kind of the same thing. They gamble on a young player with high upside, and they end up with a tremendous deal. Just well done. I cannot stop thinking about that when I see this Soto contract. How frugal and fortunate and potentially fortuitous it is that the Royals got this deal done with Bobby Witt Jr. last year when they got it done.
Wow. It's hard to imagine the Royals. I mean, it's hard to imagine following the Royals without Bobby Witt Jr. on that roster, isn't it? I mean, it would almost be like if Salvi wasn't there. I mean, and Salvi's getting up to that age where, you know, how long does he have? We're going to start probably seeing him used a little less in more key positions and maybe even other positions, maybe just batting. But, I mean, you know, you're talking about the two keys to the kingdom right now. It's Bobby Witt Jr. and Salvi.
Absolutely. And hopefully they surround him with talent. Maybe today we'll get into that. If not, we'll get into it another day. There's a lot of movement in Major League Baseball. The Royals made their big trade, but we certainly don't think they're done. We'll kind of look at what options are out there potentially for them. We can do that when we come back. We've got Paul Mills coming up bottom of the hour. So we'll have a quick segment for you next. So stay tuned there. On the way out, let's do our last giveaway, PBR tickets. Professional Bull Riders coming to Wichita. It's the PBR Unleash the Beast Tour this Friday night at Interest Bank Arena. Giving you a chance at a pair of tickets, text the keyword BEAST to the short code 20357. Professional bull riding action here in Wichita on Friday night. Again, text 20357. The code word is BEAST. Good luck, everybody. We're coming back more Sports Daily right after this. All right, Paul, you're in on this Brett Favre drama with Mark Gastineau. Favre, you might recall, many say took a dive on Michael Strahan's record-setting sack.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay. This will probably be interesting, but I would also tell you this. T.J. Watt tied that record later and broke the record. Again, so it would still be broken. The record would not still be standing, right? T.J. Watt tied Michael Strahan for it. So that would have beat Gastineau anyway.
Well, but the point is that it's amazing how this has happened. And by the way, this is all still new. Mark Gastineau is still living in a world where his record is real. Because there's also these things about, well, you know, in old football that Mark Gastineau was playing, which, by the way, was 20-some years ago, it's different. I mean, you know, it's different. The way football was played, it would be expected that somebody would get more sacks because, you know, guys are widened out and they're rush specialists and that kind of. I get that and I understand that. But what is so fascinating about this is living in a world where records in sports dominate your life. And for Mark Gastineau, this is dominating his life. The fact that this record had been stolen for him for 20 plus years bothered him a lot. And I find that fascinating because, and the reason I say that is because I remember many years ago, we were doing an interview with Cleo Littleton, the greatest player of all time. Can I say that? The greatest player of all time in Wichita State basketball history.
And
I don't mean, to, you know, disrespect, you know, some of the greats, you know, the Livingstons and all the, I mean, I really don't mean to do that, but he's the highest scorer in history of Wichita State, number one in scoring. And I remember we were interviewing, I think Bruce Hurdle and I were interviewing him back in the day, and he made a comment, and I said, how, and I asked him a question, how much will you be bothered when your record is broken? What bother you? And he says, I can't wait for my record to be broke. Then I don't have the burden of people asking me about my record. I can't wait for it to be broke. Somebody's going to break it, and it'll be fine with me, and it'll get this burden off of my back. And I'll never forget that. And Mark Gastineau has gone the other way. It's bothered him that he has lost his record, and he lost it in a fashion, by the way, we should point out, that Brett Favre took a dive for Michael Strahan to break the record by a half a sack. And I just, by the way, this is going to be a 30-30 on ESPN this coming Friday night.
Yeah, it'll be fine. But Paul, and Rick asked, did Watt do it in 16 or 17 games? Rick, Watt did it in 15 games. He had 22 and a half sacks back in 2021 in 15 games. Jared Allen and Justin Houston have also reached 22 sacks, which is what Gastineau had. So now there are five players at that threshold. None of them can, you know, I know people say, well, wait a minute, there's 17 games. None of these have anything to do with 17 games. Strahan had it in 16. Gastineau had it in 16. T.J. Watt tied Strahan's record now in 15. Jared Allen and Justin Houston both did 22 in 16 games. So it's just weird to me to go back now. Like, they should have made this. They should have made this documentary in 2000, you know, 4 or 5. Not 25 years later, after so many players have now reached this threshold. Right? You know what I mean? Like, I don't think this is going to be a good look for Gastineau.
No. Oh, no. No, you're right there.
It's going to be like to still hold on to it after the record's been broken so many tied, I should say, or achieved so many times now. I'm just like, and I'm no Brett Favre fan. I didn't like Brett Favre when he was playing. I certainly don't like Brett Favre with everything else that's been happening now. But like, an older quarterback not getting smashed on a bootleg play in a meaningless game? Like, I don't know. Come on.
And I really don't know. And I know a lot of former athletes. I know, you do, too. You know tons of them. I don't know anybody that still lives in the past. It's all gone. It's over. The only thing that I live in the past for is in the fifth grade, Anita Swain broke my heart. That's the only thing I'm still in the past about.
Anita Swain, heartbreaker.
A heartbreaker. And I'll never forget that.
I think that explains some things. We're going to have to get signed up for some therapy or something to get.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks a lot. Jiminy Christmas.
Man, that is tough. That's a tough pill to swallow. No, I probably won't go out looking for this one. It'll just make me like a little uncomfortable, I think. Like, oh, this is kind of sad. Right? Like, come on. We've been there five times since Gastineau had 22 sacks. We've been there five times now. It's a little late for that.
Okay. I found it fascinating.
I will say it's interesting. It's just not something I'm going to go after. I don't think. We'll see. We'll see. All right. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're expecting here in just a few minutes, Paul Mills, Wichita State Edmonds basketball coach. Been a few weeks since we've talked to him. Cannot wait to talk to him about what they've got coming up. Shockers are off to a great start. The metrics are agreeing with that. We'll get into it all when we return on Sports Daily. Welcome back in, everybody, to Sports Daily on a Wednesday, on a Hawaiian shirt Wednesday. Joining us on the IHOP hotline is Wichita State men's basketball coach Paul Mills. We can't see him, but we're going to pretend Paul Mills is wearing a Hawaiian shirt to celebrate with us. Coach, you got Jacob Albrockton, Paul Savage here. Happy to be with you again. Thanks for stopping by today.
You bet, Jacob. Paul, I can assure you I do not have on a Hawaiian shirt, given the fact it's below freezing.
You could have humored us and lied, but that's okay. That's all right, Coach. You guys are getting ready for a trip to Chicago. A little colder there. Saturday game against DePaul. Now the net is out. We don't have quad ones or any of those rankings out, but the net rankings are out. And I'm looking at Wichita State right now at 78. I'm looking at DePaul out of the Big East right now at 82. You've probably have a much better grasp of this than we do, but if they're at 82 now and this is a true road game, this is a world where this game could get into that quad one, certainly quad two territory as a true road game, right? This could become a pretty impactful and meaningful game for you guys when resumes are being put together later in the year.
Could. You just never know. This stuff obviously changes quite a bit over the course of the next 3.5 months before we ever get to Selection Sunday. So, you know, it's based on what happens at the year. It's not a snapshot. You know, I try to warn people, don't fall into the Vegas trap of thinking a line is the indicator of what a team should win by. And, you know, hey, you should win by whatever, 22 points. And, hey, you're good if you do and you're bad if you don't. You know, that kind of mental approach will actually be pretty stifling for you in regards to how you view a basketball game, especially from my perspective. And I'm not going to tell you that I'm not aware of the lines, but to be honest with you, I do my darndest to make sure I don't even look at them.
Yeah,
I'm aware of net. I would hope that I know this stuff pretty well. It was at a little after 5 this morning that I was staring at it. So it is one of those things that you need to find a way to go 1-0, and regardless of who the opponent is and what quadrant they may be in, there's a way to win every game, and we need to make sure from a schematic, a flow, and a personnel standpoint, we check all three boxes.
It's just, you know, as we look at it and we look at the conference, it appears right now that these metrics, and again, it's early, but, you know, Memphis and North Texas and you guys are catching a little love out of the American. And I think that's a good thing, you know, for the rest of the league. It means you guys are going to have a lot of quality games here. You'll have this one. You'll have K-State. You'll have those two games against each one of those opponents. I think for us on the outside, we're just trying to imagine all the potential futures here. And I think that through the schedule you guys have played and what you still have coming up, there are some advantages in this schedule, and I think it'll do you guys favors. Can you even look not the players, but can you even begin at this point? You mentioned going 1-0 to think about those sorts of things. I would imagine all the focus is on beating DePaul, as you've said, but you know, these things do matter later in the year.
Yeah, you actually think about this stuff quite a bit in July, to be honest with you. I mean, it's yep. June and July when you're doing this. So you're on the phone with a number of people who are really good at their job at prognosticating what the field will look like. And, you know, you have Joe Lenardi on speed dial, and I talk way more to him in June than I do in March. And I talk to him in March, especially when teams I've been able to coach have gone on to the NCAA tournament. But this is definitely something you think quite a bit about, like days. And, I mean, we're talking close to 250 hours. But this is all done in June. It's not done right now.
You know, Coach, you're 8-1, and boy, I'll tell you what, that's something to be proud of with a really good group of kids. I want to ask you just real quick, though, how worthwhile is your leadership, your seniors, the what your upperclassmen are bringing to the success of Wichita State? The Ballards, the Bells, the Beverlys, the Washingtons, the Hills, all these guys are basically seniors. I think there's one junior in the bunch. You've got so much great leadership. How does that change the dynamic of this team, and what does that mean to this team, and to a point where you're 8-1? 8-1, Coach.
Yeah, you know, I mean, we're top 25 in the country in Division I experience, so it definitely helps to have experience. So to have guys, they've been around the block, they understand the ebbs and flows of a game. They don't just fall into the trap of, man, this four-minute segment didn't go well, and lack a vision to think about the other nine. So whatever the segments are, I think when you have experienced players, they understand the things that need to get done, and they don't go with the ebbs and flows of a game. They don't get too high. They don't get too low. But it's also easier to make some adjustments, you know, and they happen a lot quicker. But I will tell you that you can be an older team, in my opinion, and you can be a younger team. But in my opinion, you win with men. And the way that you win with men is they understand the responsibilities. Men know how to handle responsibilities. And, you know, I know 50-year-old children, and I know 15-year-old grown-ups. And who understand the responsibilities that they need to take. I will tell you, we've got a group that's very responsible. They hear the message. But again, just because you hear the message doesn't necessarily mean there's an adaptation. And what's happened with this group is, listen, we need to get greater clarity on this particular area that needs to get fixed. And what you gauge is, are we adjusting? Are we adapting? And to this group's credit, they're wonderful. Love them. You know, I don't like this team. I love this team, and really think we have a chance to do something special. But it's because of who they are as people.
You love them either way, but how much more do you like them? Seeing the way that they responded though after the Florida game. There's so much momentum in them Florida, but then you guys have a big response last week. I imagine that makes you like them a little more, right?
Yeah, that's a great point, simply because you do love every single player that you coach, and you want to help them, but you don't like every single player that you coach. So I can say I really like this basketball team. I've told anybody who'll listen way back in June that really like this particular group. You know, one, I don't want to discredit Florida because they're really good. So we were not ready for that at that particular time, given where we were. We just hadn't worked on enough with Quincy and Mate out there together, to be honest with you. We hadn't worked on it at all other than 8 a.m. earlier that morning during a walkthrough for a 3:30 tip. So tried to walk through some things in order to counter, just given the fact that we may see it. But, you know, that particular game, that was Paul Mills' fault 1,000,000%. losing Ronnie a week or two earlier. We just hadn't made the adjustments necessary because we hadn't been faced with that kind of size. So, you know, we'll be better off if we face that kind of circumstance again. But going back to this week, I didn't expect anything other than the right response. I mean, that those are games, especially during the month of November. I've always considered a learning and a growth month. And, like, you're learning about your team. You're learning who we are, learning what we do well, learning what we need to stay away from. But you're also growing during that time frame. And this month is more of a refinement month, a precision month. You got to get a lot tighter with your stuff. And we showed a lot more fight on Saturday than what we even did on Wednesday and then the previous Friday.
You know, Coach, we're just around the corner from AAC play. It's going to be here before you know it. You got three games and another exhibition. Important games, by the way, but nevertheless,
absolutely
down to three games and an exhibition. And you look at the American Conference, you know, I don't know that we've asked you lately about where do you think this league is headed? Because, you know, you got Wichita State, which is going to be, I think, very much in contention for a championship. But you got Memphis, you got East Carolina, you got Rice in North Texas. I mean, some of these teams are all capable of stepping up and beating anybody in this league on any given night, whether it's Wichita State or whether it's Tulsa, which isn't very good at this point right now. But this league is going to be balanced. It's going to be tough. How do you see this league? Is there any team in this league that you go, you know, these guys are going to be okay? These guys are going to be pretty good.
Well, I would say that about everybody, to be honest with you. I am the worst at paying attention to anybody not named Wichita State. Like, it is all I eat, sleep, drink. This is my job, is to make sure I know this team better than anybody else who is walking on the planet. And so I spend so much time focused on this. I'd be lying if I said I didn't pay attention and look at scores and kind of aware of some of the things that's going on. I'm aware of, you know, Memphis beating UConn and then turning around and beating Michigan State. So, you know, I'm aware of how good North Texas is because we were both in Florida together and was aware of their win versus Minnesota. But to be honest with you, I get so locked in on what we're trying to do and that day's practice and that day's meetings that I do not do a good job of kind of gauging the conference. I take a peripheral view, but I spend less than 2 minutes paying attention to what occurs with anybody else going on in the country, and then I probably spend another 3 minutes on our league. But that's a total of 5 minutes of my day. I don't spend any more time on it than that.
Fair enough.
Coach, I want to talk about this group on the court a little bit. Ronnie DeGray will be out for a little while longer here. That's been something that I never would have really seen how pivotal his role appears to be on this team before the season, like not one of the, but it sure feels that way now. So what have you felt like the best way to adjusting to his size and physicality has been and could be down the road until you guys are able to get him back?
Yeah, you have a guy who's just so versatile. Like, I mean, honestly, he can guard 1 through 5. And, you know, if there's a 5 that, you know, maybe bigger, maybe a 7-footer, physically he can handle that. And then he can also guard point guards. He can guard shifty guys. So to be able to lose a guy of that caliber, your leading rebounder, a double-digit scorer, you know, it's going to take a hit. What I don't think people understand is just how many mistakes he was covering up for others, because he's super mobile, given his size and again, his versatility to defend multiple people on the court. So it has. We've tried not to change too much. We've inserted, you know, Joy and has come in. We've played Corey Washington a little bit longer than we did previously. But I think that level of experience that Ronnie brings is what we're really missing, because Ronnie sees things in the game sometimes. And again, it's different from sitting in a seat or even viewing it on the sideline. The view when you're standing out there on the court to be able to call out coverages, be from the bottom up about what's occurring, that stuff kind of comes with experience and puts people on alert. And that's one of the areas that we're missing. And then his ability to offensive rebound is pretty unique. I mean, he's actually sealed us a number of opportunities to win games during his time here. just with his offensive rebounding alone. So that, well, he's definitely missed. I mean, if you look at it, he was rebounding 15% of the offensive boards available. And if you go look at that, that's actually top 10 in the country. So I think from the perspective of what he's bringing to the table and what we're missing, it's on both ends of the court.
It's interesting. And Corey Washington, I would have thought of him, you know, kind of as a guy. I know he's got size, but he's been a good rebounder for you guys since Harlan's been out. Is his role developed? Did you always know that was there? And, you know, how much more could he grow into playing that sort of a position for you guys?
Yeah, you know, I was actually talking with an NBA team, and this was about 6 weeks ago, 2 months, and they were just asking, tell us who you have. And I was like, I got a guy you need to keep on your radar. And you know what? Been very impressed with Corey since he came here. The fact that he's able to shoot and I know it's not a high volume of shots, but, I mean, to shoot 41% from three, and his ability to get to the free throw line at the rate he does, and he converts those at 75%. And he knows one way to play, and that's just all out. I mean, he leads us in loose balls and the ability to retrieve them. So really excited about Corey, excited about the growth that he's made. And the more and more experience I believe that he gets at this level, he has no back down to him. So he possesses the intangibles that you need. And I'm just telling you, this kid really has a chance because he's doing all the things necessary in order to give himself a chance.
One final one for you here, Coach. Paul Mills joining us, and we appreciate the visit here. Quincy Ballard was the other part of that Beverly injury that really piqued my interest, because he's, in his time at Wichita State, has not been a big minutes guy. But, man, since that injury, 30, 27, 25, 25, he's staying out of foul trouble. He's staying on the floor. That's got to be huge to see him be able to do that for you guys while you're a little thinner at that, you know, down low there.
Yeah, and you know what? If you look at it, he's gotten better every year, and he's progressing. I mean, you're talking about a guy who shot 29% his freshman year, then went to 33, then went to 50. He was a 59% free throw shooter last year, and he's a 75% free throw shooter now. And his offensive efficiency is through the roof because he just takes quality shots. His impact defensively is well known, but I mean, he's grabbing 21% of defensive glass. So every shot the other team puts up, he's grabbing one out of every five, which is really impressive. So I mean, he's doing it on both ends. He's a problem on offense. He's a problem on defense for the opponents. So he's grown. He's continued to mature. And I'm just telling you, in 6 weeks, he's going to be better than what he is now because his approach is the right way.
I love it. And he's staying on the floor, which I know means a ton. You guys get the trip to DePaul. You'll hear that game over on KEYN Saturday noon. Then it's three straight home games, Kansas City, Kansas State, friends, lots of chances to go see the Shockers before they begin conference play next month on January 3rd. Coach, we appreciate a few minutes here with us. We'll do this again soon. Safe travels to DePaul, and good luck against what we think looks like a quality opponent there.
Jacob, Paul, if I don't talk to you before, happy holidays, and appreciate all you guys do. Thank you.
Same to you, Coach.
Absolutely. Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas to everyone out there, by the way. We're getting into that time of the year. Paul Mills, always good stuff, always really fresh and honest stuff. Yeah, Quincy Ballard, man, Paul, he's on the floor.
Oh, man.
As a 7'1" big guy like that on both ends, bringing it.
Yeah.
Playing 25, 30 minutes a game.
Yeah.
That's been, we didn't even, been awesome.
We didn't even bring up 18 blocks. I mean, he's got 18 blocks.
Well, I mean, yeah, that's what he brings to the table.
He's like playing in the paint, isn't he?
They have never needed him more with DeGray going down. So that's been really good to see. Again, you'll hear that game this weekend. Should be fun. We've sensed it for a while, Paul. Nothing's changed. The optimism right now around this particular group is high.
It's moving.
And they sure look like they're going to be a team that'll be able to compete in the American.
Yeah, I'm buying in. Yeah.
Yeah, I am too. I am too. And I hope they get DeGray back quickly, because I'd love to see him play a whole bunch of those AAC games. But this will be a good test this weekend. A true road game against a good team. Should be a fun environment. Should be a, you know, hostile environment, those sorts of things. If you missed anything there with Paul Mills, you can always go back and listen to that interview on the Odyssey app. That's an easy way to do it. Just download the show, get it, search KFH. You can take the show with you as a podcast, listen to anything. We had Trius Lotta in the first hour talking about KU football, KU basketball as well. It's all available there for you. Thanks, everybody, for doing that. We've got one more segment here. We'll get you apprised of what's happening tonight on the network. It's been a fun day, Paul. Been a real fast moving, good stuff getting through, ripping through. We got a lot accomplished today.
I think we did.
And of course, I think, you know,
Hawaiian shirts have a lot to do with that. I mean, come on now, come on, give credit where credit's due. It's these right here, baby.
Yeah, we're starting trends, fashion trends, all these things.
No question. Yeah.
We're working hard over here for you. All right, we're going to take that final break. When we come back, we'll do a little house cleaning, get all caught up, get you wrapped up for this Wednesday edition of Sports Daily.